Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Hi, this is Michael Savage of the Savage Nation. Today, Jeff Kuhner will be filling in for me. I'm recovering from a bit of a head cold. The old voice has gotten affected. And, you know, without a trumpet, you can't play in the band. There's enormous news today. And Jeff will be covering the waterfront for you today on the Savage Nation. He's got all the stories. He's got all the knowledge and all of the right attitudes for the Savage Nation. I suggest you visit my website because while my voice is out, my mind is not. This is Michael Savage for the Savage Nation.
This is Jeff Kuhner from the Washington Times sitting in for the living legend Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. My friends, we have an absolutely superb show for you today. We will be giving you on-the-spot analysis and reaction to the president's momentous speech tonight on the BP oil spill. It will be a defining moment in his presidency, and here on the Savage Nation, we will be covering it for you live. Michael, I want to thank you once again, my buddy, for the incredible honor, privilege, and opportunity to fill in your legendary shoes. You are not just an incredible talk show host, Michael. You are also a very kind and decent man. And I want to thank you for the wonderful opportunity to fill in, to talk to your listeners, to talk to members of the Savage. The Savage Nation needs you, and more importantly, America needs you. The issue of this hour. Will Obama rally the nation? Members of the Savage Nation, sources close to the White House and many key Democrats in Congress have now confirmed to me that for President Obama, everything is riding on this speech. His poll numbers are plummeting. His popularity is dwindling. His credibility is now eroding. It is not just the conservative right that has turned against him. We have been against him from the get-go because we oppose his transnational radical socialist agenda. But even many on the left are now saying he is an incompetent progressive. This is not what we wanted when we elected him in November 2008. And if this man, this charlatan-in-chief, this comrade-in-chief, our dear leader, this wannabe socialist dictator, if he cannot contain an oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, how is he going to win the war in Iraq? How is he going to win the war in Afghanistan? How is he going to reverse our economic crisis? How is he even going to balance our bloody budget? And now, a specter is hanging over the Oval Office. Now, a specter is hanging over Obama. And so tonight, in a watershed moment in his presidency, trying to break his political freefall, Obama will take to the airwaves. In the Oval Office, he will deliver a nationally televised primetime address, where he will now seek to portray himself as the decisive leader, as the great president who is now in charge of this growing environmental and economic crisis in the Gulf of Mexico. But my friends, don't be fooled by the imagery and the spin. Listen to what he says. Because what you're going to hear is a president of the United States executing Saul Alinsky's rules for radicals down to a T. As Rahm Deadfish Emanuel said, don't let a good crisis go to waste. And so now, as we approach, what is it, day 57, day 58? It's becoming, I've said this before and I'll say it again, it's reminding me of the Iranian hostage crisis. For all of you that maybe were too young, in 1979, 1980, when 52 of our diplomats were taken hostage by the crazed Iranian mullahs in Iran. That's when Nightline was born. That's when Ted Koppel started his media career. And every night you would hear, dun, 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 dun. Day 37, the American hostages have still not come home. Dun, 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 dun. Day 52, day 68, day 167. It just went on and on and on for 444 days until the election of Ronald Reagan broke the back of the mullahs and they sent him home the very day he was inaugurated. When are we going to contain this spill? And I'm going to bet all of you dollars to donuts, he will not say one word on concrete action that will be taken to contain and clean up this spill. Because, my friends, he doesn't give a damn about containing this spill. What he's going to do tonight is now he's going to use this as a unique opportunity to do what the socialists and the environmentalists have been dreaming of for decades. It is for them like a dream on the cusp of becoming reality. They are now going to use this crisis to try to pass cap and trade legislation. The whole enchilada, baby. That's where they're going to want to use the federal government to pass massive carbon taxes, to now have the federal government directly control and regiment the entire economy, especially manufacturing and industry. He's going to call again for a criminal investigation of BP, even though, as I've said repeatedly, the explosion on the Deepwater Horizon rig was purely accidental. There's been not a scintilla of evidence that it was somehow deliberate, that this was somehow responsible, that BP somehow had safety shortcuts, or that they were somehow negligent. There's been absolutely not one shred of evidence. Now, don't get me wrong. Like Michael, like Dr. Savage, I am a conservative nationalist. I am not a globalist conservative. I am not a shill for multinational companies. BP should pay for the full costs of the cleanup and the containment. And every fisherman and every person whose livelihood and jobs have been destroyed by this crisis should line up and sue the pants off of BP. But BP is still a private entity. The government doesn't have the right to come in and nationalize BP, as Eric Holder and Obama wants to do, as many on the left want to do, plunder their assets, literally take $20 million of BP's money and put it into an escrow account that's going to be run by the government so that they can then dispense it to all of their cronies and friends in the Gulf Coast. Believe me, that money is not going to go to the people who need it. It's going to go to reward the Democrats' friends and allies. In other words, tonight, Obama is going to make the case to start nationalizing BP and to start nationalizing big oil. And if Venezuela or Russia did this to a U.S. company, we would be up in arms. We would be absolutely up in arms. We would say, rightly, who are these socialist dictators to come in and confiscate private property? Who are they to destroy oil companies? Who are they to plunder their assets and their money? We have something, Mr. President, called the rule of law, called private property rights. And now Obama is licking his chops to make the case that BP's property rights, that its legal protections must go. And so, my friends, the question before the House is a simple one. Do you believe that Obama will use his speech tonight to try to pass and implement a green socialist agenda? Will this now be the moment that America falls for the poisoned chalice of cap and trade? 1-800-449-8255 is the number. 1-800-449-8255. Do you believe that Obama will press for green socialism in tonight's speech? And what are you expecting to hear from the dear leader? I want to hear from you. This is Jeff Cooner from The Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on The Savage Nation.
Savage.
Now, I was just down at Pensacola Beach, Gulf Pier, at the Fish Sandwich Snack Bar. I don't know if any of you have ever checked it out. It's a nice spot. And we were there with some of Florida's state and local leaders to discuss the situation here.
This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for the great Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. There was our dear leader telling us that he had just come back from a snack bar in Pensacola. And apparently he's been gorging on seafood down there. I can tell you this, a lot of people in the Gulf Coast are livid with Obama. Literally, they're saying he's coming down, all he's doing is eating and drinking. Now apparently he's discovered bushwhackers. He went to a place in down there in the Gulf Coast, Tacky Jack's restaurant. Apparently he likes bushwhackers, dark rum, coconut cream, little coffee liqueur, and he's belting them back one after another. And apparently he loves the seafood. Mr. President, don't hog all the whatever little seafood is left in the Gulf of Mexico that's edible. Spread the wealth around, Mr. President. Spread the seafood around, Mr. President. Don't hog it all for yourself. I'm getting very concerned about our dear leader. I am. You know, he likes to work out 2 hours a day. He likes nice, sexy physique, his cut pecs and everything. He's going to eat himself. He's going to lose his beautiful, thin waistline. Mr. President, I'm worried about your image. Take it easy. Don't eat and drink so much. I don't want you to balloon. I don't want you to lose your magnificent figure. This is what this guy is doing as the Gulf is burning. He's eating. He's drinking. He's having snow cones. He's partying with Paul McCartney, Lionel Richie, and George Lopez. Hey, come on. He's having a good time. Nothing should distract the dear leader from having a good time, even though the people in the Gulf Coast are now facing the greatest economic and ecological catastrophe in living memory. But hey, he's got to enjoy Tacky Jack's. Hey, come on. Great snack foods, snack food places to munch on, according to the dear leader. If you go to michaelsavage.com, you want to see how cutting edge the Savage Nation is? Read this story. Oil spill gives Dems perfect storm for passing new energy controls. michaelsavage.com, it's all there. My friends, that's what Obama is going to do. As he's gorging on seafood, as he's belting back bushwhackers, he has told his little apparatchiks, all the leftist mandarins around him, now is the time for us to pass cap and trade. Now is the time for us to wreck BP. Now is the time for us to lay the groundwork to nationalize the oil sector in America, just as our hero Chavez has done in Venezuela. And so the question before the House is, What are you expecting to hear tonight from Obama's speech? Do you believe he can reverse his falling popularity with his speech tonight? 255-1-800-449-8255. Let's go to our busy phone lines. Steve in New York, thanks for holding and welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Jeff. Good to be on. Listen, I saw this guy as a Venezuelan all over again while he was still running for office. Here's what's happening in my personal opinion. He's being tested right now by the world powers, primarily China. Think about what's happened. A South Korean naval vessel was sunk, and we did nothing about it. Oh, we're going to have joint naval activities off the coast of Korea. That was the biggest oil rig ever built. It was built by, as you probably know, Hyundai Heavy Industries, the large industrial complex from South Korea. According to the Northern Russian Fleet, you've probably heard this story, a North Korean merchant ship went 130 miles off of the rig, launched a mini sub which fired two incendiary torpedoes to start the fire, and 2 days later, these suicidal commandos that were on board this thing blew it up underneath. He's being tested. And you know what they're finding out? He's made out of jelly. This guy is an empty suit.
Steve, it's even worse than that. If he was made of jelly or an empty suit, his handlers could prop him up. But now what George Soros, what Hillary Clinton, what the powers that be behind the Democratic Party are starting to find out to their horror, what is now being revealed is that he's worse than an empty suit. He's a perpetual adolescent. Everything he touches, he destroys. This is Obama's big test. And he gives himself a good solid B+. Mr. President, I give you an F. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Here in Pensacola, the beautiful beaches are still open. The sand is white, the water's blue. So folks who are looking for a good vacation, they can still come down to Pensacola. People need to know that Pensacola is still open for business.
This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for the great Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255 is the number. Well, our dear leader says Pensacola's beautiful beaches are open for business. Yes, our comrade-in-chief. Yes, comrade. But for how long? The spill is advancing. It is relentless because you, sir, have failed to contain the spill. And now it is slowly going to destroy the beaches of Pensacola as it is destroying the beaches of Mississippi, Alabama, and Louisiana. And throughout that entire time, what have you done, Mr. President? Tell me, what have you done? Except go down there with your little cheap photo ops, roll up your sleeves like you're really hard at work, gorge on seafood, eat some snow cones, belt back some bushwhackers, and party it up with Paul McCartney and Lionel Richie and George Lopez. Oh, and take two vacations. This guy's literally, he's taken two vacations during the entire time of this Gulf oil spill. I don't take two vacations a year. This guy takes two vacations in the midst of, 55 days? Believe me, this. If there's one thing you're going to say about our dear leader, there's no getting around it. He is the most tanned, the most relaxed, clearly the best groomed president we've ever had. I'll tell you this. You can't ever say the presidency's weighed heavily on him. You know the expression, heavy lies the crown? Oh, with him, you can't say the crown lies heavy. Oh, he looks fantastic. Honestly, he looks younger now than when he became president. I've never seen a guy enjoy being president as much as Obama. It's like our suffering gives him perverse pleasure. Now, according to our dear leader, there may be a poll out. Just right now, there's a latest poll. Louisianans now say that Bush handled Katrina better than Obama has handled the Gulf oil spill. Remember, Bush, Cheney, Hitler, Halliburton, supposedly the most incompetent president in history, the great warmonger, the man who refused to lift a finger, allegedly, to save the people of New Orleans because of all those, quote, black faces that were sort of floating on top of the water. That was the charge the left made against Bush. The people of Louisiana are saying in poll after poll that, in fact, Bush was more effective in handling that disaster than this phony in the White House is in dealing with the Gulf oil spill. But according to the dear leader, it doesn't matter what you think. It doesn't matter what the people of Louisiana think. Oh, no, no, no. This is an unprecedented environmental disaster, the worst ever. And we're mobilizing all of the resources of the federal government, including the military. We're at war. You don't know this, but according to our dear leader, he is now a wartime president leading the charge against the oil sludge in the Gulf of Mexico. Boys, roll clip four, baby.
Yes, this is an unprecedented environmental disaster.
Yep.
It's the worst in our nation's history.
Oh, yeah.
But we're going to continue to meet it with an unprecedented federal response and recovery effort, the largest in our nation's history.
Oh, yeah.
This is an assault on our shores, and we're going to fight back with everything that we've got.
Everything.
And that includes mobilizing the resources of the greatest military in the world.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I can see that. Oh, I can see that. The way you've been ordering the Navy and the Coast Guard, the way all that oil vacuuming equipment has been used. Oh, that Bobby Jindal says we should use 35 ships with that oil vacuuming equipment. You've only authorized one. Oh, I can see that mobilization. All those island sand barriers that Bobby Jindal is asking for. Oh, I can see how you've ordered the Navy and the Coast Guard to construct that. Oh, your response has been phenomenal. Total war for total victory, Mr. President. I can see that. My friends, he hasn't done a damn thing about the Gulf oil spill except blame everybody else but himself. He has been using this to crucify BP, to crucify big oil, and now to pass cap and trade, which will be the greatest expansion of government power in the history of the United States. He is not acting like a president. He is not acting even like an American. He is acting like a wannabe socialist dictator. And Mr. Obama, you think tonight's speech is going to change everything. It won't. It's just going to unmask even more the fraud and charlatan that you are. Let's go to Ken in Las Vegas on line 10. Ken, thanks for holding and welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi there, Jeff. Let me sum up what we're going to get on TV tonight.
Go ahead, shoot.
What it's going to be is essentially, let's replace fossil fuel with technology that doesn't exist, and let me tell you how we're going to get it. Every president since television has been invented has looked directly into the camera and at the nation when he addresses the nation. Not so for Barack Obama. I have never once seen Barack Obama look directly into the camera like he wants to make eye contact with the American people. This is going to be insincere, typical Obama speech, head side to side, making eye contact with no one in the room, let alone the television audience consisting of you, me, and the Savage Nation.
Ken, you're right, but you don't know how right you are. It's even worse than what you think. You think, rightly so, that he doesn't care about most Americans and that he's a dishonest politician. You're right. And that's why he can't look at people in the eyes. I've seen him up front. This man is a clinical narcissist. It's not just that he doesn't look anybody in the eyes. He literally thinks of himself as a sovereign king. He thinks of himself as an emperor, like an old Roman emperor, like Nero or Caligula, that he can do whatever he wants and that there are no moral consequences to any of his actions. So when what you perceive as him not looking us in the eyes, it is for him a sign of complete contempt, of utter contempt. This is his country. This is his White House. This is his world. And he has a right, like some mad Roman emperor, to rule over us like we are his subjects. We are not citizens. We are not people that he is proud of, that he says, this is my America. These are my Americans. This is the unique, exceptional land of freedom and liberty that has liberated Europe from Nazi occupation, that defeated the Soviet Empire, that fought the greatest revolution the world has ever seen. No, for him, this is a country to colonize, to break. And what you're going to see tonight is him literally with that contemptible look on his face saying, do I have to even speak to my citizens? Can't they see? I told Energy Secretary Chu to take care of it. Stephen Chu is a Nobel Prize winner. You should be happy. Didn't I tell BP I have the boot on their neck? You should be happy. Listen, I know what I'm doing. It's going to be like Chavez or Castro giving a speech. It's not about you. It's not about the people on the Gulf. It's all about him. My friends, he is not a president. He is a dictator and an emperor. And tonight, we're going to see once and for all, this emperor has no clothes. Let's go to Norman in San Francisco. Norman, thanks for holding and welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. Yes, you had mentioned about how there had been nothing criminal with BP, and to a certain degree, that's true. But let me just point out one thing, that when the spill did occur, they told, let us know, the people, that it was 225,000 gallons a day. Now, had they really, just told the truth, this is my disappointment with BP. They could have just came, they were afraid to tell us that it was 10 times more. I can understand that. But had they done that, we would have moved quicker. The whole nation would have moved quicker. But we got it little increments at a time. Nobody knew all of that. You cannot tell me, in this day and age, with our technology and our instruments and equipment, that we did not know from, or that they did not know from the very start, how many gallons were coming.
Norman, I want to thank you for that call. No, look, you're right. Believe me, I'm not absolving BP. BP is squarely to blame. It's their accident. It's their rig. That's our water. That's our Gulf. That's our Gulf Coast that's being polluted. That, to me, is an environmental treasure. Those are our Americans. You know, I understand it's easy for these clowns in Hollywood and in New York, all of these sort of radical cultural left-wingers, to mock middle America. I know how they've been portrayed in Hollywood, as these sort of toothless redneck hillbillies who are ignorant with sixth grade educations, all of them sleeping with their cousins. That's the joke. So nobody gives a damn about these poor people. But here's the question I have for all these leftists in New York, Washington, and Hollywood. Tell me, who are the ones that fight for this country? Who are the ones that risk their lives in Iraq and Afghanistan? It's the blood of middle Americans. It's the people from Louisiana and Alabama and Mississippi and Iowa and Kansas and Wyoming and all parts in between. Oh, when it comes to them spilling their blood, then suddenly they're not toothless hillbillies. You hide behind them for your freedoms, but then you mock them here at home in the safety and security that they fight and die for. My friends, those Americans are our Americans, and they deserve our help. And what BP did to me was utterly unethical and immoral. Yeah, you're right. They lied. It's millions of barrels of oil, not 225,000. And they should pay for the entire cost of the cleanup, for the entire cost of the containment, and for all the damage that they're going to do to people's livelihoods and to our shoreline. But now is not the time for finger pointing. Now is the time for decisive leadership. Let's take the dear leader at his own words. He's a wartime commander now. During World War II, tell me, did FDR and Churchill, did they keep pointing the finger at Chamberlain and saying, well, if you only had not appeased Adolf Hitler, we wouldn't be in this mess. Neville, why did you appease Hitler? Why did you appease Hitler? Why did you do that? We didn't. We said, forget what happened. Now we're facing a crisis and it's a fight to the finish. We have all the resources in the world. My friends, We are the greatest superpower in the history of humanity. You are going to tell me that we can't clean up and burn and contain an oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico? Are you going to tell me this with a straight face when we literally forged civilization, the greatest civilization in the world, out of wilderness? Where we broke the greatest military force in the world, Hitler's Germany? Where we destroyed the greatest empire in the world, the Soviet Union? And now, all of a sudden, we're impotent on a Gulf oil spill? My friends, what Obama is doing in the Gulf of Mexico is symbolic of what he is doing to our economy and to our standing on the world stage. We are an economic and military colossus. No force on earth can stop us. And instead, we lie like a pitiful, pathetic giant, blaming everybody for all the problems in the world. Mr. President, you said several weeks ago, the buck stops with you. Be a grown-up and accept responsibility. You are not up to the task of being president of the United States. If you had a shred of honor, a scintilla of dignity, do the honorable thing. Tonight, on national television, say, you know what? I perpetrated a fraud upon you, the American people. I thought I was ready for prime time. I thought I was ready to be president. I'm not. And I hereby tender my resignation, effective immediately. Let's go to Joe in New York. Joe, I'm going up against a break. You got about a minute. Go, baby.
Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Joe. Jeff. You got a minute. Go.
Okay, Jeff, I want to talk about this. And the cap and tax, cap and trade legislation, which will be pushed. This issue is going to be leveraged to get this passed. Why did he drag his feet to go down to Louisiana? Why did it take him so long? Because I don't believe he was startled. I don't think he was shocked or surprised. I believe he's in on this in some way. Now, the CCX is the Chicago Climate Exchange. It's an exchange to give credits to companies for their emissions of carbon emission. And this was it's all a farce anyway, because carbon dioxide is not a toxic. Plants use it very well, and animals and us emit it. So the CCX is already in operation, and it's trading in third world countries and other countries, forests and rainforests, in an effort to lower the tax burden on these companies when they emit these carbon emissions. The whole thing is a farce. It's a tremendous scandal, and it's a way to siphon money out of the United States, this blessed little country of ours, is the greatest country on earth, to siphon money out of and resources from us to redistribute it to the rest of the world. So the carbon.
Well said, Joe. Bingo. You nailed it. It's a form of green redistributionist socialism. Take from American companies and distribute it to other companies around the world. And if you notice, who is benefiting from selling all of these carbon credits that are going to be forced by cap and trade? Al Gore, George Soros, all of the big sugar daddies of the Democratic Party. My friends, this is not just a fraud. It is a massive swindle and scam. And you, the American taxpayer, are going to have to pay for it. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage. My friends, if you go to michaelsavage.com, you will see the latest explosive story. Apparently, Al Gore left his wife Tipper, not because it was some kind of a mutual decision for both of them to part their ways after 40 years of marriage, was because Big Al was having an affair with Lori David. Who's Lori David, many of you may ask? Lori David is the former wife of Larry David, the creator of Seinfeld. He also hosts his own show on HBO, Curb Your Enthusiasm. In 2006, when Big Al was making his documentary, An Inconvenient Lie, excuse me, An Inconvenient Truth, that's when he hooked up with Lori David. And apparently, as they say, they began an affair. It was all she wrote after that. And the question I have for all of you is a simple one. Here you have Al Gore, the icon of the green left, the icon of the cultural left, who in many ways has now become a pathetic symbol of the postmodern liberal baby boomer generation. He runs around with his little swindle, his Ponzi scheme of man-made global warming, where he's made hundreds of millions of dollars, giving speech after speech. He abandons his wife for a much younger woman. And he's somebody now who in many ways has now become a morally bankrupt, dirty old man who has severed his marriage, betrayed his wife, betrayed his children, betrayed his grandchildren for a little fling on the side. And so what does this say about Al Gore's politics, that he left his wife for a much younger woman? Does it say anything about Al Gore's liberalism? I want to hear from you. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to Brett in Albany, New York. Brett, you got 20 seconds. Go, baby.
Hi. I'm wondering about the BP oil spill, right? Right. Why were they drilling in 5,000 feet of water in the first place, right?
Brett, here's the answer to your question. Because of Al Gore's environmental regulations. Environmentalists have forced BP to go that far out. And that was the ultimate cause of the spill. But the mainstream media won't tell you about it. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Michael Savage. News, views, and reviews you won't get anywhere else, obviously. China's military threatens America. We will hurt you. Did you hear that one? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, Dianne Feinstein's good friends. General Petraeus slumps over desk during Senate hearings. Well, all those stories and more, including the inept governmental handling of the oil spill, will be heard today on The Savage Nation, where Jeff Cooner of The Washington Times will be filling in for me as I recover and refine my golden voice.
This is Jeff Cooner from The Washington Times sitting in for the great Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255 is the number. 1-800-449-8255. Michael, my dear friend, as you believe me, conservatives everywhere around the world, and yes, including in Britain, where you have been disgracefully banned. Everybody needs you, Michael. Get well, my buddy, and come back soon. Michael, thank you. Thank you once again for the wonderful opportunity of filling in for you. I can't tell you what an honor it is, my buddy. To all of you out there, members of the Savage Nation, go to michaelsavage.com. You are going to get stories that you cannot find anywhere else. One of the top stories is General David Petraeus. It's right there on michaelsavage.com. Petraeus slumps over desk during Senate hearing. General Petraeus, the head of Central Command, literally the face of the American military in the Middle East, the man who oversaw the successful surge in Iraq. In testimony before the Senate Armed Services Committee today, as he was talking with Senator McCain during a question and answer session, to everybody's shock and horror in the room, began to slowly faint and slump over the desk. He was immediately taken out of the hearing room. Apparently, he was dehydrated. He had to drink a lot of water. He claims he hadn't eaten breakfast. And so Senator Carl Levin, the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, came back, said the general is feeling better, and he will be back on Wednesday to complete his testimony about the war in Afghanistan. Now, why is this big news? Why is this up on michaelsavage.com? Because, my friends, it is not just that our top military commander nearly passed out in a Senate Armed Services Committee hearing. It is that that fainting by General David Petraeus is symbolic of America fainting in Afghanistan. What is now happening is that we are now losing the war in Afghanistan. For nearly 10 years, our brave men and women have been fighting a brutal insurgency in the caves and mountains of Afghanistan. Many of them have been fighting without the proper equipment, without the heavy weaponry, and most importantly, without the political support needed to win. And now, over the last 18 months, what has our dear leader done? He proclaimed last summer, if you remember, with all that indecision, month after month, oh, he was wringing his hands. He didn't know what to do about Afghanistan. Should he go in? Should he pull out? Should he send in more troops? And so he agreed to send 30,000 more troops. His own troop surge. But rather than giving them a strategy for victory, what did he do? He sent them into that death trap. Remember, Afghanistan is the graveyard of empires. It is there that the British Imperial Army was smashed in the 19th century. It was there that the vaunted Red Army that tore the guts out of Hitler's Wehrmacht, out of the German military in World War II, the vaunted Nazi juggernaut, was swallowed up in the 1980s by the Mujahideen. And now our troops were sent in there with rules of engagement that no military could win with. You can't shoot at civilians, even though terrorists hide among them. You're not allowed to have collateral damage. You're not allowed to attack at night. You must make sure that the government in Kabul, led by that corrupt dictator Hamid Karzai, approves every operation. And you want to see the ultimate in a farce of what Obama has done to our military? The ultimate insult? As if our nation, our military, was full of baby killers and war criminals? We are handing out medals to our military, not for those that murder terrorists. No. Not for those that kill jihadists. Not for those that massacre the enemy. No. We now hand out medals for those that, I kid you not, show restraint regarding civilians. If you're in a firefight where you have the enemy hiding in some Afghan hut with the goats running around, the camels and the goats running around, and they're using the civilian population as human shields, if you're being shot at and you don't shoot back, that's incredible restraint, according to the dear leader. Oh, then they're going to give you a nice medal for showing restraint. You may be dead. You may be dead, but you're going to have a beautiful medal in your coffin when they send it back to America. Nice, beautiful medal on your coffin. This is the kind of perverse thinking. This is the kind of appeasement strategy of the anti-Americanism that is pervading our entire strategy in Afghanistan. My friends, this is Vietnam all over again. And as our commander faints in a congressional hearing, our president is fainting in Afghanistan. And if you want to see how utterly sick and despicable everything has become, how literally black has been turned into white and white into black, I want all of you to go to michaelsavage.com. It is one of the lead stories on the website. California man wanted to cut off bin Laden's head. His name is Gary Faulkner. He is a 52-year-old California construction worker. On that fateful day on 9/11, he lost somebody very dear to him. In fact, as he admits, like many of the victims' families, he has never been able to get over that day. They destroyed his life on that fateful day. Those jihadist Islamic fascist butchers destroyed his life. And now he is suffering from kidney disease. It is terminal. And so what does this honorable American patriot do? He does, frankly, what Obama and all the other scoundrels on Capitol Hill refuse to do. Out of his own pocket, he gets himself a gun, a 40-inch sword, a knife, and night vision goggles. And on his own dime, he travels to Pakistan. Not once, not twice, not three times, but seven times, looking to kill bin Laden and literally behead him. He wants to bring him back to America with his head as a trophy. And when he approaches the northwestern frontier of Pakistan, when he is there scouting and looking for Osama bin Laden, looking to maybe get into Afghanistan because he suspects he knows where bin Laden is hiding so he can kill him, what does the Pakistan government do? They arrest Gary Faulkner with the full support and approval of Obama and his henchmen here in Washington. In other words, my friends, we are giving medals to people who refuse to shoot at the enemy. We are now imprisoning, we are now going to put in jail an American who wants to behead Osama bin Laden. Tell me, since when did Osama bin Laden become a protected citizen of the United States? Tell me, is he not the most wanted man in the world? Did he not murder 3,000 Americans? Did he not mastermind all of the atrocities in Iraq and Afghanistan? Has he not been slaughtering Americans all over the world for over a decade? And now this guy, Gary Faulkner, is now, he's the one that's sitting in jail. He's the one that's now the bad guy. Why? Because he wants to behead Osama bin Laden? Oh, I'm sorry. He won't read him his Miranda rights. Is that it, dear leader? He's not there with his lawyer. He's not there to give him a lawyer. My friends, what you are now seeing is not just the policy of appeasement. It is the policy of surrender. And my question to you is a simple one. Do you believe President Obama is deliberately throwing in the towel in the war in Afghanistan? Is he deliberately seeking to lose the war in Afghanistan so he can placate his anti-war liberal base in America? I want to hear from you. 1-800-449-8255 is the number. 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage. 1-800-449-8255 is the number. Do you believe Obama is now deliberately throwing in the towel in the war in Afghanistan? He's now moved up the withdrawal date. He now wants troops leaving not by June of next year, but by December of this year, is the war lost in Afghanistan? I want to hear from you. Let's go to Mike in Denver on line six. Mike, thanks for holding, and welcome to the Savage Nation.
I went to Afghanistan in the in 02 and 03, and the first thing I did before I went was study history. I was in an Army rifle company. I was an infantry soldier. I studied Alexander, the British, and Russians, and I knew going in there that we couldn't win as we can't now. It doesn't matter who the commander-in-chief is. The Afghan tribes are going to unite against any outsider. And Alexander had to leave about a brigade of soldiers, about 3,500, 4,000 soldiers, when he passed through on his way to India. So for this president or any president to do anything, nobody can win there. The Afghan people are going to get together against an outsider. And one last point, what we need somebody with integrity, like Sergeant York from World War One. He received the Medal of Honor. He wasn't given it. He wasn't awarded it. He received it for his heroism. And when they wanted to make him a hero, he said no, because they would disrespect the man who died. And
Mike, I want to thank you. Mike, I want to thank you for the service to your country. To me, it's people like you that make America the greatest nation in the history of the world. And the reason why I'm behind a microphone, the reason why I work at the Washington Times, the reason why I'm a radio talk show host in Washington, is because of people like you. The freedoms that I enjoy are only guaranteed by the sacrifice of men like you. And so for that, I thank you. You are completely right. It's a different generation now. In World War I and World War II, we fought wars to win. And many of those men that came back from the trenches in France in World War I or the battlefields of Germany in World War II, they didn't want medals, because they knew it would disrespect those that died. They were above medals. They were a generation that believed in God, country, and family. That life was about sacrificing yourself and living for others outside of yourself, for the greater good, for the eternal, traditional, historic values of America. What is life, my grandfather told me, but to live life according to God's will and God's commandments, and to love the nation that gave you life, to love your family, to love your parents, to love your children, to have a mark in this world, to leave something better behind. It's not about you. You see, that's what Big Al doesn't understand. That's what Obama doesn't understand. I know for Big Al, it's easy for him to lie. He's been doing it now for 10 years. The ice caps are not melting. There's more snow in the Himalayas than ever before. You want to know what the problem with the polar bears are? Literally, there are too many of them now. There's an epidemic of too many polar bears. Just recently, there was another journal study, a scientific study. Remember those rising sea levels? That was the most apocalyptic thing Al Gore kept saying. Oh, the rising sea levels. New York will be submerged. San Francisco will be submerged. Fiji will disappear. All of these islands are going to go under. Hundreds of millions of people are going to be refugees, global warming refugees. Sea levels are going down. He has lied about everything about global warming. And now we find out. Look at this man with no ethical or moral center. He literally believes himself to be a god, where he is not restrained by any moral codes whatsoever. So he abandons his wife. He abandons his children. For what? Some green environmentalist, Lori David? Some green bimbo? We now know he's had an affair. Is this not part of liberalism? I want to hear from you. 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255 is the number. 1-800-449-8255. Do you believe our dear leader is deliberately throwing in the towel in the war in Afghanistan? Is he waving the white flag of surrender? And is it time to bring our troops home? I want to hear from you. Let's go to Bill in Florida on line 8. Bill, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, sir. Well, my opinion is, at least as far as this guy goes, he was wrong. I mean, we can't support vigilantism.
Okay, when you say this guy, you mean Gary Faulkner, the guy who wanted to kill bin Laden and was arrested for it? Okay.
Exactly. It'd be the same as if there was a drug lord set up in your neighborhood and somebody decided, you know, he had caused some deaths and somebody decided to take the law into their own hands. That's wrong.
Well, Bill, let me ask you this, though. I mean, a drug lord presumably is on American soil, but this is the greatest terrorist mastermind of our time, a man who has declared war upon the United States, who has masterminded the murder, the mass slaughter of 3,000 Americans just on 9/11, never mind all the other thousands he's masterminded in Iraq and Afghanistan. Now, what I don't understand is this. George Bush wanted bin Laden dead or alive, as he put it, wanted dead or alive. Our dear leader, Barack Obama, keeps saying, I want him dead. And so here you have an American saying, well, if you're not going to win the war on terror, if you're not going to bring this man dead, who is responsible for the deaths of my loved ones, then I'm going to go into Pakistan and I'm going to do the job myself. Now, tell me, is that not just? Is that not moral? Is that not the right thing to do?
No, it isn't. And I lost two friends myself. I was born and raised in New York City. I had two high school friends who died in the 9/11 disaster. I'm ex-military. I was in Iraq 3 times. I did 3 tours over there. And I still say that what this man has done is an example of vigilantism.
Well, I mean, even if it is an example of vigilantism, don't you think some people should be murdered? I mean, let me ask you this, Bill. If you could have assassinated Adolf Hitler, let's say circa 1938, you're just an ordinary guy. And you take a little vacation with your family to Berlin. Hopefully, I hope you're not Jewish. And you're walking around Berlin, and there's the Führer. And you say to yourself, I can save 50 million lives by just taking him out right now. Now, you would be a hero in history books, wouldn't you? So I don't understand. Why is it, if it's okay for the American military to try to hunt him down, and they haven't been able to find him, if it's okay for Bush to order drone attacks to kill people, if it's okay for Obama to order drone attacks to kill people, why isn't it okay for this guy? He's paying out of his own pocket. He's not endangering any Americans. He's not endangering even any Pakistanis or Afghans. He's only looking for Osama bin Laden. And if he finds him, he'll kill him. Wouldn't he be doing you a favor as a veteran, Bill? Wouldn't you be happy to bring his head back on a platter? Isn't that something you want?
You asked me if I would have taken out Hitler. Absolutely. But I also would have expected to spend the rest of my life in jail, where I would have been happy knowing that I had saved all those lives. But I still would have been put on trial for murder, because murder is wrong.
Well, that's where you and I disagree, Bill. I think sometimes you have to kill somebody in self-defense. And what you do with Adolf Hitler, that would be self-defense. If somebody now was to assassinate Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, I'm telling you right now, he's doing the world a favor. He's preventing a nuclear holocaust in the Middle East. If somebody is to kill Osama bin Laden right now, do you know how many lives he would have saved? So to me, that's an act of self-defense. Now, if the Pakistanis want to imprison this guy, that just shows to me that they're not serious about tracking down Osama bin Laden. It's what I've been saying for years. Pakistan is in collusion with the Taliban and with the jihadists in Afghanistan. They should unleash this guy and say, you know what? If you can kill him, all the power to you. Isn't that what Pakistan is supposed to be doing themselves? They supposedly have agents all across the northwestern frontier looking to kill this man. And so instead, they don't unleash this guy. They put him in prison. That says everything you need to know. Bill, if this guy, Gary Faulkner, breaks out of prison, finds Osama bin Laden, kills him and beheads him, and brings his head back as a trophy, I'm telling you, we're going to throw him a ticker tape parade. Believe me, he's not spending any time in an American jail cell. Of course, unless you're Eric Holder or Osama bin Laden. Let's go to, or Barack Obama. Let's go to Israel in New York. Israel, thanks for holding and welcome to the Savage Nation.
Jeff, you're doing a great job. I've been listening to Michael for about 14 years and never felt that I had to call because everything is always covered. I just wanted to connect with BP to how there's a lot of similarities to the mid-90s in Russia, to a company that was controlled by Khodorkovsky, which was Yukos, which at the time was worth hundreds of billions of dollars in reserves, which around 2000 was taken away by him and thrown in jail by Vladimir Putin. And basically through rigged government auctions, they basically did the exact reverse of what's happening now to BP. The scary connections are that Soros, a little known fact, made most of his billions in the mid-90s with a lot of the oligarchs. And there's books, Red Herring, which go into in-depth to a lot of these activities. But basically, anything that and it's Soros who's bankrolling Obama, who's pulling all the strings. And this is just out of Soros' playbook, the stuff that happened not too many years ago, which is being replayed here to BP. And it was scary when you were talking about nationalizing. It was the exact reverse that happened in Russia in the 90s.
Bingo. Israel, you hit the nail on the head. Let me give all of you an exclusive right now on the Savage Nation. We're about roughly 20 minutes away from our dear leader's primetime speech. It's going to be one of the defining speeches of his presidency. We will play the speech here on the Savage Nation, and we will have instant analysis and reaction. What is Obama going to say? I'm already being fed stuff from my sources on Capitol Hill. You're going to get it before everybody else in America. He is now going to demand in his speech a national tax on carbon. Remember I warned you it was coming? Now he's going to say, if you use any kind of, if you emit carbon dioxide, you now have to pay a tax for the privilege of emitting carbon dioxide. It's a massive tax hike. And what is he going to do with BP? He is now going to call to have even more federal control over British Petroleum. It's not going to be BP anymore, my friends. It's not going to be British Petroleum. It's going to be Barack Petroleum. And what is it that BP has now released a statement? Shell, Conoco, BP, all of the big oil companies have now released a statement. What are they now asking for? They want cap and tax. They are asking for a cap and trade system to be implemented in America. They want to now trade carbon credits on the open market. Who has now been lobbying Obama for the last couple of years? Who's been lining the coffers of the Democratic Party? British Petroleum, Shell, Conoco, all of them, because they have hundreds of millions of dollars invested in selling carbon credits on the open market. My friends, this is a massive Ponzi scheme. What you're seeing is a form of bureaucratic corporatism. It is socialism through the back door. All of these big corporations, the likes of George Soros, Al Gore with his green investment hedge fund, BP, Shell, Conoco, it's a shell game. Now they want in on all these carbon credits that you're going to have to trade and pay for. They're going to make out like gangsters. So now we have a Gulf oil spill that BP doesn't seem too much in a hurry to clean up, that Obama doesn't want to contain, even though we have all the resources. And all of a sudden, we go from an oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, a lousy hole on the ocean floor, to now, a national tax on carbon, a national energy tax, a cap and trade system. Tell me, how did we get all of this from a lousy spill in the Gulf? I could have contained that thing on day three. Literally, here's your response as president. You call him up on the phone. I call up the president of BP. Tony Hayward, Tony, I'm giving you 48 hours to contain and clean up this spill. If you can't handle it, literally at midnight on day three, I'm sending in the U.S. Navy. I'm sending in the Coast Guard. I'm sending in the full brunt and power of the U.S. military. And I'm going to stick you with the tab. And this thing would have been contained within a couple of days. Instead, it has been raging and raging and raging. And now tonight is going to be the master con. Now we need cap and trade. And BP is for it. And Shell is for it. And Conoco is for it. And we need a national carbon tax. My friends, in Eastern Europe, what everybody says is that the former Soviet Empire has become the Soros Empire. He has been in bed with the Russian oligarchs. He is in bed with Putin's gangsters. And now he is creating our own socialist oligarch system here in America. And Obama is his Putin. Let's go to Denise in San Francisco on line three. Denise, thanks for holding and welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. I still feel that people aren't being fair to President Obama because he represents change. He's different than the standard old boy network. And even if he had gone in, as you just gave an example, and gave BP 48 hours to do what they needed to do, or he was going to send in the Navy, somebody from the right wing would have jumped up and said, now he's using our military inappropriately, he's doing this wrong, he's doing that wrong. The man couldn't go to the toilet and do it properly, according to Michael Savage and people like you who just don't like him. You're haters. You won't give him a chance to do what he needs to do. The Senate, the Congress,
Denise, let me ask you this. Look, you sound like a nice woman, so I don't want to turn this into a shouting match. You really do. You sound like a nice woman, so I'm going to answer your points. I don't hate anybody. Let me be very candid with you. I'm a practicing Roman Catholic. It is a sin to hate anybody. To me, Obama is an American. To me, he is a human being and an individual. You don't think I wanted him to succeed? You honestly think I like to see our country at $13 trillion debt? You honestly think I like to see us having 10% unemployment? You honestly think I like to see our troops dying? Our men and women dying in Afghanistan with no strategy for victory? I don't. Now, you said he promised us change. Well, he's giving us a lot of change. It's socialism. It's destroying the traditional fabric of America. Every sector he's dismantling. He's had 18 months in power. Now, Denise, let me just ask you this. Has the deficit under his watch gone up or down? Has unemployment gone up or down? Are we now winning the war on terror or are we losing the war on terror? Would you not deny that the facts are obvious? He's had 18 months and he's failed. What has he succeeded at, this, Denise? One thing, literally, one thing has he succeeded at. Can you name me one?
Well, he did pass that, or he got his health bill reform passed to an extent. But
and is that a success? I mean, to nationalize one-sixth of our economy? To give us a socialized healthcare system that has been a failure all over the world? Denise, we can't even afford it. Let's just say for argument's sake, socialized medicine is the best thing since sliced bread. It's going to cost $3 to $4 trillion to implement. We don't have that money. We're going broke. Doesn't that concern you as an American that we are literally going bankrupt? Doesn't that bother you? It's your children and grandchildren who are going to pay. Doesn't that bother you?
What bothers me is the fact that for decades before, the standard wasn't working, but it kept happening time and time and time again. Then you get somebody.
Denise, what wasn't happening? We had the greatest healthcare system in the world. I mean, Denise, let me ask you this, and I have to let you go because I'm up against a break. Tell me, if our healthcare system was so broken, why is it that all of these Saudi sheiks come to America to get treated? Why is it all these German and French industrialists come to America to get treated? Why is it all of these Chinese oligarch communists come to America to get treated? If the system is so bad, why does everybody around the world want to get American health care? Can you answer me that?
Why are there millions of children without insurance if we're so good? If what we had in the past...
What millions of children? You have Medicaid. Any hospital has to treat anybody. Denise, that's the law. If you don't have health insurance and you go to a hospital, they have to treat you, whether you have insurance or not. It's the greatest lie that's been fed to you by the liberals. And in the end, Denise, here's what's going to happen. Your health care is going to be rationed. Your taxes are going to go up. The quality of your health care is going to be destroyed. And for what? So this man can call himself a great liberal and a great socialist as he buries our children and grandchildren under a mountain of debt? That's not leadership. It's suicide. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage. My friends, if you want to read my column, you can read it every Friday in the Washington Times. Just go to WashingtonTimes.com, punch in my last name, Cooner, K-U-H, N as in Nancy, E-R, and you can read my commentary on a wide range of issues every week. My friends, we are about 4 to 5 minutes away from Obama's televised speech from the Oval Office. This is going to be a political watershed in his presidency and maybe even in our nation's history. With the Democrats poised to lose control of their majorities in November, they know it's now or never. And so Obama is going to come out, according to my sources, he is going to call for a national energy tax. He is now going to try to get even more control over British petroleum. It's going to become Barack Petroleum. And the big one is he is going to come out and demand comprehensive cap and trade legislation. And he will say that BP, Shell, Conoco, all of the big oil companies support cap and trade. In fact, BP was an original founder of the cap and trade lobby. In other words, my friends, they are now going to create the architecture for a new green socialist economy. They will now transform America into a European nanny state. They will destroy traditional capitalism and the free enterprise system as we know it. This is what the speech is going to lay out tonight. And so we are going to carry the speech live here on Michael on the Savage Nation. We're going to have some comments from Michael before and after the speech. And then we will have on-the-spot analysis and reaction. You don't want to miss it. And the questions that you should be asking yourselves are this as we listen to the speech. Is the speech going to turn around his dwindling poll numbers? Will he make the case for his Green New Deal? Stay tuned, my friends. We're going to have all of that and so much more in the next hour. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
What you're about to hear is a fantasy. It will come to you from Obama's fantasy island, where he has taken time out from eating snow cones and Gulf shrimp in order to tell you that it's all BP's fault and he knows just what he's doing because that's what he heard in the faculty room. Filling in for me in this hour, while you listen to Obama's bumbling, will be Jeff Kuhner of the Washington Times. All this and more on the Savage Nation.
For generations, men and women who call this region home have made their living from the water. That living is now in jeopardy. I've talked to shrimpers and fishermen who don't know how they're going to support their families this year. I've seen empty docks and restaurants with fewer customers, even in areas where the beaches are not yet affected. I've talked to owners of shops and hotels who wonder when the tourists might start coming back. The sadness and the anger they feel is not just about the money they've lost. It's about a wrenching anxiety that their way of life may be lost. I refuse to let that happen. Tomorrow, I will meet with the chairman of BP and inform him that he is to set aside whatever resources are required to compensate the workers and business owners who have been harmed as a result of his company's recklessness. And this fund will not be controlled by BP. In order to ensure that all legitimate claims are paid out in a fair and timely manner, the account must and will be administered by an independent third party. Beyond compensating the people of the Gulf in the short term, it's also clear we need a long-term plan to restore the unique beauty and bounty of this region. The oil spill represents just the latest blow to a place that's already suffered multiple economic disasters and decades of environmental degradation that has led to disappearing wetlands and habitats. And the region still hasn't recovered from Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. That's why we must make a commitment to the Gulf Coast that goes beyond responding to the crisis of the moment. I make that commitment tonight. Earlier, I asked Ray Mabus, the Secretary of the Navy, who's also a former governor of Mississippi and a son of the Gulf Coast, to develop a long-term Gulf Coast restoration plan as soon as possible. The plan will be designed by states, local communities, tribes, fishermen, businesses, conservationists, and other Gulf residents. And BP will pay for the impact this spill has had on the region. The third part of our response plan is the steps we're taking to ensure that a disaster like this does not happen again. A few months ago, I approved a proposal to consider new, limited offshore drilling under the assurance that it would be absolutely safe, that the proper technology would be in place, and the necessary precautions would be taken. That obviously was not the case in the Deepwater Horizon rig. And I want to know why. The American people deserve to know why. The families I met with last week who lost their loved ones in the explosion, these families deserve to know why. And so I've established a national commission to understand the causes of this disaster and offer recommendations on what additional safety and environmental standards we need to put in place. Already I've issued a 6-month moratorium on deep water drilling. I know this creates difficulty for the people who work on these rigs, but for the sake of their safety and for the sake of the entire region, we need to know the facts before we allow deep water drilling to continue. And while I urge the Commission to complete its work as quickly as possible, I expect them to do that work thoroughly and impartially. And one place we've already begun to take action is at the agency in charge of regulating drilling and issuing permits, known as the Minerals Management Service. Over the last decade, this agency has become emblematic of a failed philosophy that views all regulation with hostility, a philosophy that says corporations should be allowed to play by their own rules and police themselves. At this agency, industry insiders were put in charge of industry oversight. Oil companies showered regulators with gifts and favors and were essentially allowed to conduct their own safety inspections.
You're listening to the one and only Savage Nation.
And when Ken Salazar became my Secretary of the Interior, one of his very first acts was to clean up the worst of the corruption at this agency. But it's now clear that the problem there ran much deeper, and the pace of reform was just too slow. And so Secretary Salazar and I are bringing in new leadership at the agency. Michael Bromwich, who was a tough federal prosecutor and inspector general. And his charge over the next few months is to build an organization that acts as the oil industry's watchdog, not its partner. So one of the lessons we've learned from this spill is that we need better regulations, better safety standards, and better enforcement when it comes to offshore drilling. But a larger lesson is that no matter how much we improve our regulation of the industry, drilling for oil these days entails greater risk. After all, oil is a finite resource. We consume more than 20% of the world's oil, but have less than 2% of the world's oil reserves. And that's part of the reason oil companies are drilling a mile beneath the surface of the ocean, because we're running out of places to drill on land and in shallow water. For decades, we have known the days of cheap and easily accessible oil were numbered. For decades, we've talked and talked about the need to end America's century-long addiction to fossil fuels. And for decades, we have failed to act with the sense of urgency that this challenge requires. Time and again, the path forward has been blocked, not only by oil industry lobbyists, but also by a lack of political courage and candor. The consequences of our inaction are now in plain sight. Countries like China are investing in clean energy jobs and industries that should be right here in America. Each day, we send nearly $1 billion of our wealth to foreign countries for their oil. And today, as we look to the Gulf, we see an entire way of life being threatened by a menacing cloud of black crude. We cannot consign our children to this future. The tragedy unfolding on our coast is the most painful and powerful reminder yet that the time to embrace a clean energy future is now. Now is the moment for this generation to embark on a national mission to unleash America's innovation and seize control of our own destiny. This is not some distant vision for America. The transition away from fossil fuels is going to take some time. But over the last year and a half, we've already taken unprecedented action to jumpstart the clean energy industry. As we speak, old factories are reopening to produce wind turbines. People are going back to work installing energy-efficient windows, and small businesses are making solar panels. Consumers are buying more efficient cars and trucks, and families are making their homes more energy efficient. Scientists and researchers are discovering clean energy technologies that someday will lead to entire new industries. Each of us has a part to play in a new future that will benefit all of us. As we recover from this recession, the transition to clean energy has the potential to grow our economy and create millions of jobs, but only if we accelerate that transition, only if we seize the moment, and only if we rally together and act as one nation. Workers and entrepreneurs, scientists and citizens, the public and private sectors. You know, when I was a candidate for this office, I laid out a set of principles that would move our country towards energy independence. Last year, the House of Representatives acted on these principles by passing a strong and comprehensive energy and climate bill, a bill that finally makes clean energy the profitable kind of energy for America's businesses. Now, there are costs associated with this transition, and there's some who believe that we can't afford those costs right now. I say we can't afford not to change how we produce and use energy, because long-term costs to our economy, our national security, and our environment are far greater. So I'm happy to look at other ideas and approaches from either party, as long as they seriously tackle our addiction to fossil fuels. Some have suggested raising efficiency standards in our buildings, like we did in our cars and trucks. Some believe we should set standards to ensure that more of our electricity comes from wind and solar power. Others wonder why the energy industry only spends a fraction of what the high-tech industry does on research and development, and want to rapidly boost our investments in such research and development. All of these approaches have merit and deserve a fair hearing in the months ahead. But the one approach I will not accept is inaction. The one answer I will not settle for is the idea that this challenge is somehow too big and too difficult to meet. You know, the same thing was said about our ability to produce enough planes and tanks in World War II. The same thing was said about our ability to harness the science and technology to land a man safely on the surface of the moon. And yet, time and again, we have refused to settle for the paltry limits of conventional wisdom. Instead, what has defined us as a nation since our founding is the capacity to shape our destiny, our determination to fight for the America we want for our children. Even if we're unsure exactly what that looks like, even if we don't yet precisely know how we're going to get there, we know we'll get there. It's a faith in the future that sustains us as a people. It is that same faith that sustains our neighbors in the Gulf right now. Each year, at the beginning of shrimping season, the region's fishermen take part in a tradition that was brought to America long ago by fishing immigrants from Europe. It's called the Blessing of the Fleet. And today it's a celebration where clergy from different religions gather to say a prayer for the safety and success of the men and women who will soon head out to sea, some for weeks at a time. The ceremony goes on in good times and in bad. It took place after Katrina, and it took place a few weeks ago, at the beginning of the most difficult season these fishermen have ever faced. And still, they came and they prayed. For as a priest and former fisherman once said of the tradition, the blessing is not that God has promised to remove all obstacles and dangers. The blessing is that he is with us always, a blessing that's granted even in the midst of the storm. The oil spill is not the last crisis America will face. This nation has known hard times before, and we will surely know them again. What sees us through, what has always seen us through, is our strength, our resilience, and our unyielding faith that something better awaits us if we summon the courage to reach for it. Tonight, we pray for that courage. We pray for the people of the Gulf. And we pray that a hand may guide us through the storm towards a brighter day. Thank you. God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.
Well, we know that Obama's speech was typical of a buck passer and his lack of executive experience, something you'd expect from a man who spent his life in faculty lounges or in beer busts. He has done virtually nothing to contain this spill other than blame people and threaten to sue them. The fact of the matter is, if you ask those in Louisiana, he has stood in the way of Louisiana's crisis control. It took the Department of Homeland Security more than a week to classify the spill as an event calling for the highest level of federal action. And when state officials in Louisiana tried over and over again to win federal permission to build sand barriers to protect fragile coastal wetlands, they got nowhere with Obama's administration. The government bureaucracy under Obama would not listen to anyone in Louisiana. The direction from the top was not clear, and there's no accountability. And so, therefore, Obama's double talk serves no end whatsoever to stop America's worst environmental disaster. All he can do is sue, sue, and sue. That's all he knows how to do as a low-grade lawyer. This is Michael Savage.
Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation. Members of the Savage Nation, Michael is on the line. Michael, what was your take of the speech?
Bull crap in the world again. I've never seen anything like it. The man is still in college. I mean, I have laryngitis, or I would have been on the air yesterday and today, but I'm outraged by this phony, this imposter. He now wants to make it Barack Petroleum, from British Petroleum to Barack Petroleum. Basically, the man lied. He reinvented history. He did nothing. He didn't visit the Gulf for 12 days. He ate ice cream cones and shrimp the other day. The guy is an imposter. He blocked Louisiana from doing their own job. Ask the governor of Louisiana. Federal agency stood in the way of everything the state of Louisiana tried to do. The guy is a liar. How can anyone in the media let him get away with this? I'm outraged, Jeff. And then to top it all off, there we go. Saul Alinsky's plan, as you said, don't let any crisis go, you know, unturned and unfurrowed. Oh, let's go for green energy. We don't know where we're going. We don't know how to get there. We don't know what the hell we mean by green ecology. But, you know, it sounded good in the college when we were smoking dope and sucking beer. Well, let's go for green energy. 99% of this country runs on oil. Air Force One doesn't fly on banana peels. And the hot air coming out of Obama's mouth is an abomination. My voice is cracking up, Jeff. That's all I can say right now.
Amen, Michael. Thank you so much, my friend. There you heard it, straight from Michael. Frankly, I couldn't agree with him more. I think he said it beautifully, eloquently. It was a bad speech. It was cold. It was ineffective. Many of you heard it on the radio. I had the television on and watching him. He came across as aloof, as distant. And essentially, to me, the nutshell of the speech was this. We don't know where we're going. We don't know how we're going to get there. But damn it, we're going to get there. That was a speech that could have been delivered by any third world socialist dictator. I don't know how we're going to get there, but socialism is coming. I guarantee you that. I don't know how it's going to look like, but I'm telling you we're going to get there. My friends, this is a con man in chief trying to pull the wool over the eyes of the American people. And my question to you is a simple one. Do you believe Obama succeeded in conning the American people? What were your impressions of the speech? 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. What was your impression of Barack Obama's speech? Did the con man in chief succeed in conning the American public? I want to hear from you. My friends, I have to tell you, let me give you a couple of my first instant reactions. What I found most surprising, did you notice at the end of the speech how suddenly now the most secular president in American history, the man who never goes to church, the man who claimed by his own admission that the most beautiful sound he ever heard was the call to prayer to the local mosque when he was in Indonesia as a child. Now all of a sudden, he's talking about the blessing of the fleet. That people of all religious faith were there for the blessing of the fleet. Suddenly now, he's found God again. Suddenly now, he's looking for religious divine inspiration. Now, I think it's obvious. He's a modern leftist. He's a Marxist radical leftist. And what is it that leftists worship? It's not God. It's Gaia. It's Mother Earth. And so now Mother Earth is being plundered. Mother Earth is now being decimated. So now we have to pray to the gods to come and liberate and save Gaia. But if you look at everything what he did, everything what he said, it was like a robot, like a tape, repeating the same endless liberal mantra we've been hearing now for weeks. China is not investing in new green technologies. That's a lie. They're drilling. They're drilling everywhere. That was one lie. The other lie, they've done everything to contain this crisis. As Michael brilliantly and eloquently said, they were late from the beginning. They didn't allow Louisiana the ability to defend their coastlines with simple things like island sand barriers. This guy blamed BP the whole time. And did you notice? Suddenly he's got Ken Salazar. Oh, now we're going to have the Interior Secretary, and he's now going to crack down on the Minerals Management Service because, hey, it was all that cozy relationship between Bush and Big Oil that got us in this mess. No, it wasn't. Our dear leader, our comrade in chief, Mr. President, with all due respect, accidents happen. There is oil drilling going on all over the world. Tell me, why aren't the Russians stopping to drill oil? Why don't they have a ban? Why don't the Chinese have a ban? Why doesn't India have a ban? Why doesn't Venezuela have a ban? Why don't your Saudi friends have a ban? They're drilling all over the place. Because they know that oil and gas is the future of the world. Who controls oil and gas controls the lifeline of the future economy. And by him putting that moratorium, my friends, he is now literally crippling our ability to find out how much oil we really have. He says we only have 2%. How does he know? It's because of you green environmentalists, Mr. President. We can't drill anywhere. Why do you think they're out so far? Because we're running out of oil? No, because you don't want us close to the shorelines. You don't want to go to the outer continental shelf. How the hell do you know how much oil we have? He has been lying from the get-go. And my friends, tonight he tried to close the deal, and I don't believe he did. Let's go to our busy phone lines. Steve in Portland, Oregon, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Jeff. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Steve. What's on your mind?
Yes, 10-year United States Marine Corps active duty, and I just want to let you know that I think we need to peel the onion one layer deeper. If Obama is as smart as we thought he was, he would have placated the populace today and given us what we wanted. He played the party line, and he did what we expected him to do. We should have really been concerned if he gave us what we wanted, and he gave us, you know, this is what we want, and he didn't do that. Now we know who he is.
Steve, no, that's it. You nailed it. We now know who he is. What was the most consequential? There was two things that are the most consequential of this speech, and it's basically giving the game away. One, we're going to go after BP's money. We want their $20 billion. We want it into an escrow account. In other words, we're going to break the back of BP. Now the government is getting in and essentially nationalizing companies. It's no longer, as Michael said, it's not British Petroleum. It's Barack Petroleum. It's now his. And he's now going to destroy this corporation. And two, he laid it all out there. He didn't have to say it because it's understood. We now have essentially 4 or 5 months before the November elections. We need a new green socialist economy, quote, a new clean economy. We don't know how we're going to get there. We don't know how it's going to look like, but get there we will. In other words, destroy corporate America and create a green socialist utopia. There you have it, my friends, in a nutshell. That's what we saw tonight. This man is a dictator, and now everybody can see it. Let's go to Dave in Wisconsin. Dave, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks. I found his speech the usual infomercial for socialism. He got freedom and capitalism is bad, and regulation socialism is good. Buy now will include additional layers of, you know, government oppression, regulation, and no additional charge. You get a lifetime of easy payments, and you can have hope and change. And you don't even have to call now because they'll come to you for your contribution. But you got to allow, you know, maybe several years for delivery of the product.
Dave, this was a. I'll tell you who's jumping up and down tonight. There's really two groups. The green lobby, all of those radical environmentalists, that was the speech they wanted. And two, the trial lawyers. Oh, they're going to make out like bandits. And who did he appoint as the head of management and mineral service? As he announced, this is the guy that's this is the agency and the person that's supposed to now oversee the cleanup of the Gulf oil spill, Michael Bromwich. Now, who is Michael Bromwich? Does he have any experience or expertise in oil and natural gas or in cleaning up environmental disasters? He's a low-level third-rate trial lawyer. He's a lousy ambulance chaser. In fact, he cut his teeth trying Oliver North in the Iran-Contra scandal. He's a die-hard leftist. He's probably a red diaper baby. So now we have a lawyer, a trial lawyer, heading the Minerals and Management Service. He's got no experience whatsoever in oil and gas development. None. Zero. Nada. My friends, it's all there. He's going to unleash the lawyers. He's going to break the back of big oil. He's going to nationalize BP, and he's going to ram cap and trade and a national energy tax right down our throats. You thought Obamacare was bad? Believe me, he's just getting warmed up. 1-800-449-8255 is the number. What was your reaction to the Obama speech? Let's go to Christine in Georgia on line 10. Christine, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Jeff, what really concerned me about some of the comments that were made tonight by Obama, one thing in particular, he stated outright there will be another crisis. This man from day one in his campaign told the nation, told our citizens of this United Nations, of the American, excuse me, I'm sorry, I'm so upset I can't even talk about this. He told America that he would fundamentally change this nation. He's trying to change us into a socialistic society, and he is continuing to plant seeds in the minds of America that another crisis will occur because this has been planned. Just like this oil spill was not an accident, 2 days prior to the explosion, the CEO of BP dumped his stock. Goldman Sachs dumped stock in BP. This was nothing that was an accident. This was a planned crisis, and Obama already has another one planned, and he's planted the seed in the minds of American people that we should expect this. There's another.
Christine, I want to thank you for your call. Look, Michael mentioned Saul Alinsky. That was one of Obama's key radical Marxist mentors. Let me tell you the most influential of all the Marxist intellectuals of the 20th century, and it'll all make sense to you. The people that Saul Alinsky studied, the people that Obama studied, that Bill and Hillary Clinton studied, it wasn't Vladimir Lenin, it wasn't Karl Marx, it was Leon Trotsky. He was the great intellectual of the Bolshevik Revolution. And what did Trotsky teach? He said the key to a socialist takeover of any society is to have a perpetual crisis in order to create a perpetual revolution. What have we seen under Obama? Perpetual crisis. The economy in crisis. The healthcare system in crisis. Foreign policy in crisis. Everything is in crisis. Nothing gets solved. But everything is in crisis. So now, while he sits back and does nothing, literally nothing, except go and gorge on seafood, as he's standing there stuffing his face and belting back bushwhackers, as he's eating snow cones, as he's partying and doing the cha-cha with Paul McCartney, the BP oil spill rages on. Oh, another crisis? Now we need to nationalize the oil sector. Now we need cap and trade. And you're going to see, my friends, what's the next crisis coming? You're already seeing it. The border. We can't enforce the border. It's like BP. We can't contain the spill. So now we have to give amnesty to 20 million illegal immigrants. That's the next crisis. Everything he's doing is to augment the power of the state, to create a socialist dictatorship, and to keep the Democrats in power for generations to come. My friends, he is the usurper in chief, and now we can all see it. Let's go to Rhonda in Florida. Rhonda, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you, Rhonda?
I'm okay. I just listened to the speech. I've been watching Obama closely since way before he got elected. The speech tonight was despicable. I cannot believe that the media or the American people are going to allow him to get away with it. He's just categorically lie after lie after lie. I was looking at a study and a book actually last written in 1997. He wrote another book in 1995. This has all been laid out by the United Nations and by people, you know, the World Monetary Fund. There are so many organizations that are operating right now behind the scenes. I do not believe that America is sovereign any longer. And if there was ever a time for a revolution, it's now. And the people who are in a position to do something better wake up, because my children, I have 3 sons and a grandson. I fear for their safety and their future, because we are not America any longer, not with this Manchurian candidate in office.
Thank you very much, Rhonda. Look, Obama is an international socialist. He is part of the one world socialist New World Order. George Soros has been pushing for this for decades. And essentially, Obama is his puppet. He is the puppeteer. And Soros is now going to make out like a bandit with all of this carbon trading that's going to take place. Al Gore with his new mistress, Lori David, that green bimbo, they're going to make out like a bandit. All of these big bureaucratic corporations, along with big government, socialist governments, are going to make out like bandits. And it's going to be you, the American taxpayer, that's going to be left high and dry. What did you think of President Obama's speech? I want to hear from you. Did the con man in chief succeed in conning the American public? 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Kuhner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Kuhner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage. Let's go to Terry in Wisconsin on line three. Terry, welcome to the Savage Nation.
The man is a chameleon. Did you listen to him appealing to Midwesterners? Somehow the producers are now important in this country. Oh my. And somehow it's God bless us all. The man is morphing reality. If you understand anything about evil, evil moves boundaries. Moves boundaries and annihilates boundaries. This is a three-step process, and he's blurring the boundaries now. Wake up, America. He's blurring boundaries. Stop.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Terry. Look, he's found Jesus now. Now he's found God. Now he's looking for divine inspiration. Now he's appealing to the heartland. He feels your pain. You see, he was trying to pull a Clinton. It was so obvious to me. He feels your pain as he's stealing your money and breaking your back. He feels your pain. I was just telling this to the producers during the break when I was watching him on television. He looks a little puffier to me. Looks like he's put on a few pounds. I think it's all that shrimp, all that crab fish, all those bushwhackers he's been belting back. Mr. President, you're losing your gorgeous physique. Stop it. You gotta stop eating the snow cones. Lay off everything. Take it easy when you go down to the Gulf. Hey, listen to Michelle Obama. You got to get on a diet. You're going to become obese. All this money we're spending to combat obesity, and you're stuffing your face. Come on, Mr. President. You got to show a better example. Let's go to Jim in Tucson. Jim, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Jeff. Well, I got to say, the speech did not disappoint me. It was exactly the load of dissembling and vacuous crap that I had expected it was going to be. And I almost threw a cup at the television when he completely glossed over the issue of the moratorium down there. And he said, oh, I understand it's going to affect the people working on those rigs and stuff. Of course, he didn't mention it's going to affect the people who sell them their food, who sell them their clothes, who rent them their homes, the people who haul the oil, the people who process the oil, and the whole huge chain of economic activity that will go down because of that moratorium. I mean, the man is just beyond belief to me.
Jim, excellent call, and I want to thank you for that, my friend. It's going to cost at least 10,000 jobs just for those working directly in the oil drilling business. Never mind, you're right, all of the repercussions for the Gulf Coast economy. They have to pay homes. They have to buy groceries. They have to make their car payments. This oil drilling ban is utterly senseless and destructive. And there he sits there like, oh, I know it's created a lot of controversy, but I have no choice. I want things to be safe. Mr. President, that's why this is unprecedented. Oil rigs don't explode every day. It's one of the safest ways to extract oil. Accidents happen. Your administration issued 33 permits to those 33 rigs. They're all safe and ready to go, Mr. President. How come you suddenly pulled back on that decision? Because now you can see your opportunity to break the back of the domestic oil industry. My friends, He's not letting a good opportunity go to waste. And on television tonight, you saw the liar in chief in full form. Let's go to Sadat in North Carolina. Sadat, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Good evening. America is a leader in innovative ideas, and I know that's true. And it's also true that the amount of energy that's being consumed by all nations across this planet is increasing at an incredible rate. And don't think that BP is alone in its techniques of offshore oil and energy extraction. All those companies have basically the same techniques at their disposal. Even, and the president said today that he doesn't know how we're going to get there. Well, I believe that he's calling for all the best minds across America, the young scientists who are coming up, who are going to be a part of the next generation of energy use. And
Sadat, I got to let you go. I'm up against a break. In essence, they've been peddling clean energy for decades. It hasn't worked because it's inefficient. We have all the oil we need. All we have to do is drill for it. This is Jeff Kooner of the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. May God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America. Savage.